The Supreme Court of the State of Nevada is back in session. The Honorable Justice Perigary presiding.
Good afternoon, counsel. This is a date and time set for a hearing on this matter in docket number 81053, Pinto versus District Court. Counsel, are you ready to proceed?
I'm ready, Your Honor.
Okay, would you like to reserve any time? I noticed you filed a reply.
Yes, 5 minutes, Your Honor.
All right, then you may proceed.
Thank you. The issue before this court is whether I violated NRS 7.085 by commencing and maintaining an action knowing that the contract was void. I did not. This is now the third proceeding before this court. The first proceeding occurred in 2016 when I filed a petition for writ of mandamus requesting that the original judgment against me entered by Judge Walsh, the trial court, finding an excess of $250,000 in attorney's fees against me personally that I had violated 7.085. In February of 2017, the Court of Appeals vacated that judgment, finding that it wasn't clear on the record that my knowledge of the license limitations equated to knowledge that the contract was void or the litigation was groundless. They allowed the Washingtons to renew the motion if they could identify the point of time that I knew the contract was void. Mr. Parker, on behalf of the Washingtons, did file a renewed motion, again arguing from the beginning that I knew the contract was void. It was now assigned to Judge Crockett in the district court, who denied the motion. Based on the denial of that motion, Mr. Parker, on behalf of the Washingtons, appealed, which resulted in the second proceeding before this court. In that proceeding, in April of 2019, this court found that Judge Crockett had abused his discretion by not providing detailed findings, and they remanded it back to Judge Crockett to hold an evidentiary hearing. That evidentiary hearing was held in November of 2019, over 3 days. After the evidentiary hearing, Judge Crockett issued the instant ruling that is the subject of this proceeding. Judge Crockett found I did not know that the contract was void from the beginning of the case, as Mr. Parker had argued for 3 years, but I knew it was void on October 11th, 2013. Now on that date, and that was in my case in chief during trial, I called to the witness stand George Lyford. Mr. Lyford was an investigator for the Nevada State Contractors Board. During his testimony, he revealed the existence of an administrative code that stated a contract was void if the contractor bid over his license limit. Based on that testimony, Judge Crockett then imputed actual knowledge to me that the contract was void, and when I didn't immediately dismiss my contract claim, he ruled that I violated NRS 7.085, that my actions were objectively unreasonable, vexatious, and amounted to bad faith, and he imposed in excess of $137,000 in attorney's fees against me personally. Now, it's important to look at the time frames of these three proceedings. In the first two proceedings, based on the argument that I knew from the beginning the contract was void, the time period for the first two proceedings was from October of 2005, when the underlying case commenced, through October 2011, when discovery ended. This current proceeding now looks at a totally different time period, the period during trial. And in my opening brief, I provide three compelling arguments to substantiate that I did not violate NRS 7.085 by not dismissing my contract claim or continuing with trial. And the ruling by Judge Crockett is erroneous, an abuse of discretion, and should be set aside and vacated by this court. First, after the testimony of Mr. Lyford, Mr. Parker filed a 50A motion, which NRCP 50A authorizes the court to grant a judgment when a party has failed to prove a legally sufficient evidentiary basis for the jury, or where a claim or defense that under the controlling law cannot be maintained. Now, Judge Walsh, after hearing oral argument, denied the 50A motion, indicating that she herself did not deem the contract void. I relied on that ruling not to dismiss my contract claim and continue with trial. Now, in response to that ruling by Judge Walsh, Judge Crockett in the evidentiary hearing stated, well, Judge Walsh, with all due respect, was wrong. That's improper of Judge Crockett to impose his opinion. He must base his opinion on what was reasonable at the time, under the circumstances, and not with the benefit of hindsight. He failed to do this, which is an abuse of discretion. Then, well, Judge Walsh submitted...
Ms. Pintar, Justice
yes.
Kadish, didn't Judge Crockett find that, in fact, what was reasonable at the time would be to know that the contract was void under the statutes and administrative code provisions?
My understanding is that I didn't dismiss the contract claim, and he found that I had violated 7.085.
Right.
Just days later, is the 50A motion was filed and argued, oral argument. So
right.
between the, right. So at the time, it was based on the Nevada Administrative Code that was revealed that under the Administrative Code. Now, my argument for the 50A motion is important because first I argued that the Administrative Code is under the exclusive jurisdiction of the administrative agency, in this case, the Contractors Board. Now, in January of 06, and this is important, there was a contested hearing held in front of the Contractors Board between these parties. Now, during that hearing, they did find that A. Primo Builders had, in fact, exceeded their contract license limit. They imposed an administrative fine and never found that the contract, no finding that the contract was void. In fact, they had directed A. Primo to return to the construction site and finish the construction, which was about 70% complete.
Ms. Pintar,
and that was the basis of
Ms. Pintar, yes. It's not the role of the Contractors Board to determine whether the contract is void, is it?
Well, that has not been decided. That's their administrative code that they enacted.
Didn't you, in fact, argue to the district court that it wasn't the role of the Contractors Board to evaluate the contracts and any claims under the contract?
I did not claim that. In fact, I had argued expressly to Judge Walsh that I felt it was the sole jurisdiction of the Contractors Board if they were going to invoke that. And also, I want to point out to this court that under NRS 624.3015, subsection 3, that if a contractor exceeds his license limit, what it states in the statute is it's a disciplinary action. And so if in fact the administrative agency couldn't void the contract, why is it in their administrative code? But it's not been decided. And is voiding a contract disciplinary action? That's an issue that has never been decided by this court or by any court, as far as I'm aware.
Well, doesn't NRS 624.700 in subsection 4 specify that if you bid or enter into a contract in violation of these provisions, then it's deemed void ab initio?
And I always argued that NRS 624.700 dealt with someone that did not have a contractor's license. Now, the argument has been made that they exceeded the scope of their license in this proceeding. However, NRS 624, and I'm sorry, I thought I had it right in front of me, and I'll find that, finds that if a contractor does a project that is beyond their scope, then the Contractors Board must issue a cease and desist, which they never did in this case. They, in fact, ordered A. Primo Builders to return to the site and finish the project, even though they didn't, because it wasn't made that. So I always argued that 624.700 was for someone that exceeded their scope, but not their license limit, because, again, we have to look at 624.3015, subsection 3.
And your client did both, right? Your client both exceeded its license scope and exceeded its license limit. Isn't that correct?
That is not correct. The only place where they exceeded their scope was for the swimming pool. The swimming pool was never part of this action. There was never any finding from the Nevada State Contractors Board. And again, if they knew that A. Primo Builders had exceeded their scope, under the law, they must issue a cease and desist to A. Primo Builders. That was never done. So there was never any finding they exceeded their scope in the underlying matter. The only finding with the Nevada State Contractors Board was that they had exceeded their license limit and imposed an administrative fine. And again, I must refer back to 624.3015 that says if you exceed your limit, it's a disciplinary action. So based on that denial of the 50A motion, that the judge is the sole arbiter and exclusive arbiter of the law. And Judge Walsh, based on my argument, and I made that argument, she didn't provide me an opportunity to do a written ruling, so I did a oral argument, and she denied the motion. But that's not all. She submitted it to the jury. And based on both the 50A, the denial of the 50A motion, which was reasonable for me to rely on at the time, as well as submitting it to the jury under the standard in Watson Round, that's enough to preclude sanctions.
And then Judge Walsh, after the trial verdict, granted judgment as a matter of law, correct? After reconsidering and having time and after the jury verdict, she looked at it and said, your client's contract is void.
Months later. But I can't see what she's going to do months later. And I had an alternate claim for unjust enrichment. If she had granted the 50A motion, even if I had dismissed my contract claim, I had an unjust enrichment which was not dismissed till the final judgment that I could have substituted for the contract claim. And Judge Crockett came back and said, well, I couldn't have prevailed on it. Again, that's improper for him to say that. And finally, the Washingtons had counterclaims that they never dismissed. Mr. Parker asked specifically that the counterclaim should go forward and as well as fraud and be submitted to the jury. So even if the contract claim had been voided, I still had an unjust enrichment claim. There were still counterclaims. And then Judge Crockett imposed another $130,000 in fees for the time frame of April through the evidentiary hearing for the writ of mandamus I originally filed, for the renewed motion, for the appeal, and provided no detailed findings as required by NRS 7.085 that requires a fact-intensive analysis of why me defending myself was deficient, frivolous, vexatious, not grounded in fact or law, and violated NRS 7.085. It was reasonable of me to rely on the ruling of the judge. And even if I had decided to dismiss my contract claim, I had an alternate claim of unjust enrichment that could have gone to the jury. I'll pass the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Mr. Parker.
Good afternoon, Justices. It's difficult to figure out where to start given what Ms. Pintar just said, but I found a quote in the transcript of the last day of the evidentiary hearing. And Ms. Pintar says, the question is asked of Ms. Pintar by the court, I believe, so in terms of your contract claims, why didn't you dismiss your contract claims? This is at the 50A motion level. She says, okay, maybe I should have, but I didn't. And I start there only because of the questions asked by Justice Kadish. We went through a 10-day trial, and this is something that Judge Crockett said during the three-day evidentiary hearing in response to questions, in response to some comments from Ms. Pintar. Because Ms. Pintar, in her brief, as well as her reply brief, tried to blame Judge Crockett and Judge Walsh for decisions that she made. NRS 7.085 does not include a focus of decisions made by the court. It's a determination and analysis of what the actual offending attorney knew or should have known and how those acts were vexatious and extended discovery, not discovery, but the litigation, and done so in bad faith. And so when you consider what happened here, Judge Crockett said, having now had the opportunity to go through the motion to dismiss in 2005, the motion for summary judgment in 2008, the motion for directed verdict, 50A motion, the motion for JNOV, Judge Walsh did not learn the case and had no reason to know the case better than the litigants.
And Mr. Parker, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
I hate to interrupt you in your train of thought there.
No, go ahead.
That takes me to the early stages of this litigation. And I'm not sure if you were trial counsel or not. You may not have been. You may not know the answer to this. But in the early stages of the litigation, didn't this all come out in discovery that the contract, wouldn't that be the primary assertion that the contract's void? Exceeded its license limit. Was that argued from the beginning of this litigation? Or did it just pop up in the hearing?
No, that's a very good question, Justice Barrett-Gary. It came up early on in the motion to dismiss, and Ms. Pintar argued that the Nevada State Contractors Board had the right to make those decisions, which I believe to be completely in opposite to the Nevada Supreme Court decision in Bivens. But she was able to convince Judge Cherry that it should not go forward, that it should go forward. And the motion to dismiss was denied. And it was early on. As you know, there was no discovery done at that point. And what bothers me the most in terms of that consideration is I believe that Ms. Pintar knew then, or any attorney doing construction litigation should have known. Because the Nevada State Contractors Board complaint, which came out, I believe, in October of 2005, indicated that A.A. Primo was in violation of several subsections of the NAC, one of which was NAC 624-640. And the caption, the title of that provision, Justice Perigree, says, bid or contract void if licensee exceeds scope of license or monetary limit. That's the title. When Ms. Pintar was questioned by myself and the court during the evidentiary hearing, she indicated that despite the fact that Nevada State Contractors Board referenced this statute, this administrative code section, she never read it. She never read the title. She never read the language of that administrative code. And she uses that as a shield, as a sword, to say because she didn't read it, she can't be found guilty of not knowing what the contents of that administrative code would provide. Well, that's incorrect. A lawyer taking on the service, this type of legal service, has an obligation to be familiar with the law that affects the case. And when the Nevada State Contractors Board decided that, in fact, A.A. Primo exceeded the license limit and fined A.A. Primo for that, he knew back then that that contract was void because the license limit was 100 and the bid and contract was 122,000. She also knew that they exceeded the scope of their license, which is what Justice Kadish was alluding to earlier. He was acting as a general contractor with only a C3 carpentry license. And so he received notification from the city of North Las Vegas, indicating that he could not do that work under a C3 license and needed a B2 license.
Right. Let me ask you one more question addressing her unjust enrichment claim. Can you explain to me a little bit more how that didn't come? Understanding perhaps the contract claim would have and should have and was dismissed, you've got an unjust enrichment claim there that could be meritorious.
Of course. And I will refer back to comments made by Ms. Pintar. She admitted during the evidentiary hearing, the three-day evidentiary hearing in front of Judge Crockett, that she knew her client did not have unclean hands. She admitted that Mr. Ignatowicz took $20,000 in cash and didn't report it from my client, that he didn't have the appropriate license, didn't have the appropriate license limit, didn't have a right to enter into subcontract agreements with a plumber, electrician, a roofer, a mechanical, and to dig a pool. All of those things go beyond a C3 license. And I got to give it to Judge Crockett. He asked Ms. Pintar several times, if you knew all of these things, you knew that you did not have a valid unjust enrichment claim. And finally, she conceded that that's the reason why she dismissed it, because she said she knew she could not prevail on the unjust enrichment claim.
Do you have a record cite to that? Because I have a feeling it's going to be contested.
I do. See if I can find it for you quickly.
If it's going to take too long, if you'll provide it to us later, if it's going to take much time.
I saw it this morning. Here it is. I'm looking at, this is the second day, I believe. Make sure. I believe this is the 25th, the first day. And I will read the question and the answer. And this was from the court, I believe, asking the question. At what point or what happened to the unjust enrichment claim, and when was it voluntarily dismissed? Was it by motion? What happened? This is Ms. Pintar's response. It was voluntarily dismissed, Your Honor, right before it went to the jury. This is what she says. Because I realized at that point I would go into that more in my direct testimony. Is that my understanding? Is that, and again, I'm just reading directly from it. Is that there was a contract. So in my viewpoint, that point, based on the totality of the circumstances, which is the better claim to go with, and in the closing, there was no mention of void contract in the closing by Mr. Parker. And this is the most important part. So I believe it was after the closing, but I know it was before resting. I voluntarily dismissed it because I knew I couldn't prevail on it. This is page 267. Lines 9 and 11 that I read all of them.
But that doesn't mention any of the merits as to unclean hands. It simply is referencing, from what I understand,
the fact that you wouldn't
pursue an unjust enrichment claim if you had a contract to pursue and had a valid contract claim.
Prior to that, the court asked and summed up Ms. Pintar's unjust enrichment claim. And I'll read exactly from Judge Crockett's comments. This is what I'm reading exactly. He said, the problem is what happened here is ripe with examples of unclean hands. The contract is for more than he's allowed. He's engaging people he's not authorized to engage in. He's engaging in activities which exceed the scope of his license. In addition to this, although he's no longer seeking payment, he's attempting to construct a pool by doing an excavation and doing things that are way outside of his license, doing pretty much everything you could possibly do that is wrong, incidentally, also building a patio and a casita.
Okay, I got the gist.
So This is Judge Crockett's comments during the hearing after hearing Ms. Pintar speak. This is page 266, lines 4 through 13.
Okay.
Justice Paragary.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And so, I just want to clarify. So the case went through trial, went to the jury, and unjust enrichment was not presented to the jury, correct?
Not at all.
No jury instruction, no request for a verdict on an unjust enrichment claim.
Nothing at all. Not a verdict form, not a jury instruction, not even an open argument. There was no place in that entire trial where unjust enrichment was mentioned or argued to the jury or presented to the jury in any form.
Okay.
None. And in fact, what I thought was misplaced in terms of Ms. Pintar's arguments during, or just comments during the evidentiary hearing, is that she alluded to an unjust enrichment claim, and then when we brought forward, the court brought forward the affirmance, it says specifically, directs the evidentiary hearing to focus on when the contract claim should have been dismissed. So, although Judge Crockett thought it was beyond the scope of the affirmance, the remand for the evidentiary hearing, he explored that as well and informed Ms. Pintar based upon the information and the exhibits that were stipulated to by the parties for the evidentiary hearing that there was no viable unjust enrichment claim and that it had been voluntarily dismissed. So it was never presented to the jury. Ms. Pintar recognized that it was she could not prevail on it, and that's probably why it was never presented to the jury.
Mr. Parker, let me ask you this about more fundamental questions about NRS 7.085 and specifically subsection 1A, which I think is the basis for the sanctions imposed by Judge Crockett. So my question is, Ms. Pintar says she didn't know subjectively during this period of time that the contract was void. She was still relying on the arguments that she has articulated today and has over these years. Is that enough for the standard under here if she believed it was valid, or what is the standard?
No, that is definitely not the standard. It's the standard, which I believe we can address real quickly. If you look to the court's order vacating judgment and remanding, page 3. The question is, would the evidentiary hearing reveal that the attorney has brought or maintained a civil action that either is not well-grounded in fact? That's number one. Judge Crockett found, based upon Ms. Pintar's own witnesses, that Mr. Ignatowicz admitted he exceeded his license limit, exceeded his scope. Mrs. Ignatowicz, the CFO of the company, admitted exceeded his license, exceeded his scope. Ms. Pintar admitted that she knew he exceeded his limit. So we know it's in terms of being grounded in fact, it was not well grounded in fact, number one. Number two, in terms of being not warranted by existing law, Ms. Pintar finally had to admit that she had not read the statute, but when she was confronted with the statute and the administrative code by Mr. Leifert, the head investigator at the Nevada State Contractors Board, that for the first time she had to focus in on it. And she said she went back to her office and looked at it. And that's why at that point Judge Crockett says, well, if you read it and you recognize what your own witnesses said, then you should have dismissed your contract case at that point. Now, Ms. Pintar in response says, well, I didn't believe my witnesses, my clients, were correct. And Judge Crockett couldn't believe that she would interject her own opinion in terms of factual accounts given by witnesses, her own witnesses at trial. And then finally it says, or is not warranted by a good faith argument for changing the existing law. Ms. Pintar said, tried to argue in the evidentiary hearing that perhaps 624, the NAC and NRS 624 were unconstitutional. So Judge Crockett said to give or raise the unconstitutionality in front of Judge Walsh. She said no. He said, did you ever make the argument for extending the current law in some way? She said no. He said, well, then if you did not, if it wasn't grounded well in fact, and certainly under Bivens and under the statutes, it wasn't grounded in the current law, and you never asked by motion or argument that the existing law should be changed or modified, then you don't meet any of the requirements in terms of 7.085. And I apologize, I went a little long. Right. I apologize. Justin,
thank you for your answer.
Katie, did that satisfy your question?
It did. Thank you. I appreciate that, Mr.
All
Parker.
Right.
Justice Hardesty? Yes, I do have one question, Mr. Parker, Justice Hardesty. So your argument is that any argument a lawyer would have made that the statute and the NAC were in doubt or in conflict with respect to the consequences associated with working outside scope or outside limit was resolved in Bivens. Is that your position?
Absolutely. And I have to say, Justice Hardesty, when I received the order of affirmance, the court's position was so succinct, the Supreme Court's decision was so succinct, and that's exactly what Judge Crockett said as well. When questioning Ms. Pintar about the order of affirmance and Bivens, Ms. Pintar says she still does not agree to this day with the Supreme Court. And in response, I said, in my questioning, and it's reflected in the transcripts, you still, as an attorney, you have an obligation to counsel your clients based on the existing law. And if she, to this day, still does not agree with Bivens, which is the pronouncement by the Supreme Court that the district court decides what's void or voidable as a contract claim, then if you don't enforce 7.085, you're saying to all attorneys, be as aggressive as you want. You don't have to abide by the laws as pronounced by the Nevada Supreme Court or by our legislature, and whatever happens, happens. And you can always claim at the end, well, I just didn't know, or I just didn't read the case, or I didn't read the statute or the administrative code. And that's what Ms. Pintar has argued throughout. Once it became clear, she just says, I didn't know because I didn't read it, and I didn't respect the Nevada Supreme Court's decision in Bivens.
Okay, thank you.
Did that answer your question, Justice Hardesty?
Yes, I'm sorry. I said thank you.
Anything else?
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Thank you so much.
Okay. Counsel, you've got 2:06. I'm going to add another minute so you can address Bivens.
Yes, Your Honor. I have never said I didn't agree with Bivens. What I said was Bivens said that the contractor's board can't impose damages. Is voiding a contract imposing damages? It's not been decided. There's nothing that says one way or another. So I didn't say I disagreed with Bivens. Secondly, the unjust enrichment, I did not. That was on the 25th. I thought it had been dismissed before the jury. It had not. So if I had it wasn't dismissed until the final judgment, and that was revealed on the third day of the evidentiary hearing. And if I had dismissed my contract claim, then there was no reason I couldn't submit my unjust enrichment. That reference by Mr. Parker was taken out of context. It means that I didn't submit it to the jury because I submitted a contract claim and I couldn't have prevailed on both. That's what I meant by that, and that is the case. You can't submit both. And as far as me not prevailing on the unjust enrichment claim, I testified in the evidentiary hearing of Las Vegas Fetish and Fantasy Halloween Ball versus Ahern Rental, where it found that if the unclean hands do not relate to what is under dispute, then you can still prevail on an unjust enrichment claim. The A. Primo had violated disciplinary action. They paid fines, but it had nothing to do with the construction, really, because it was 70% complete, and that comes from the contractor's board. The contractor's board ordered them back to complete it, and there were very minor things found wrong with the construction itself, and that was what the contract dispute was about. And again, the scope, they never exceeded their scope. And in fact, I found the statute, NRS 624.212, subsection 2, says that if they violate without having the proper classification issued pursuant to this chapter, that the Nevada State Contractors Board must issue a cease and desist order. That was never issued. There was never any finding from the Nevada State Contractors Board that they acted as a general contractor. What Mr. Parker refers to from the city of Las Vegas is they couldn't pull the permit, which they didn't. The owner pulled it as an owner builder. And as far as me reading the Nevada Administrative Code, the Nevada Administrative Code pursuant to NRS 233B is under the jurisdiction and authority of the administrative agency, the Contractors Board. I relied on their rulings to move forward. I never, ever violated 7.085. I always felt, even and during trial, that I had a valid claim. The jury found that, yes, if I had hindsight, and when I said, yeah, I wish I had dismissed my contract claim and submitted the unjust enrichment, we probably wouldn't be here today. But I had to make the best decision at the time. And based on the denial of the 50A motion, I thought my contract claim was my stronger claim. So I would ask this court to find that I did not violate NRS 7.085. I made reasonable actions based on what I knew at the time. Thank you.
All right, counsel, thank you for your arguments today. This matter will stand submitted, and the court will stand in recess until the next call of the court. Thank you.